Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This is Pat Prescott as we continue our Black History Month celebration, honoring individuals who are making waves in Southern California. It is our honor and pleasure to welcome to the studio two young men today. One of them, our honoree, is Ted Lumpkin, who was born in Los Angeles, California, and went on to become one of the Tuskegee Airmen. He was assigned to the 100th Fighter Squadron in Tuskegee, Alabama, back in 1942, and he is with us today. He has made some other wonderful contributions to the city of Los Angeles as a real estate professional and a mentor to many others around him. And for this and many other reasons, we honor Ted Lumpkin, Jr. today. Hi, Ted. Welcome.
Hi, how are you?
It's good to have you here. Yeah. And joining us also is Edward Grice, who is the executive director of the Tuskegee Airmen Scholarship Foundation, who is here to talk to us as well about some of the great efforts that they are making in our community in honor of Ted Lumpkin and so many others who have preceded him. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
The way that I actually met Mr. Lumpkin was at a scholarship presentation that was done by the Tuskegee Airmen Scholarship Foundation. I was there for a young scholar who I know who's going to Harvard, who is being helped by the foundation, which I think is really wonderful. Got a chance to meet Mr. Lumpkin there and thought right at that moment, what a great opportunity it would be to have you come down to the studio and talk to us a little bit about your story. Because that's what this series really is about. There's so many accomplished individuals in our community, and all of them have a story that generally points to not only other people in their lives, but to a lot of the things that have happened that have really been the foundation of their success. And as that rare person that's from Los Angeles, California, Ted, I would love for you to talk about growing up here in L.A., what that was like, and some of the things that happened to you as a young boy that have influenced the man that you have become.
Well, I guess with an introduction like that, I need to say something. I was born in Los Angeles on 52nd Street, 52nd and Long Beach Avenue. At the time that I came along, 52nd Street was nearly all white. My father and mother moved there. Why exactly, I don't know. But anyway, they did get a house there. And I thought I had a pretty nice upbringing. I went to Hooper Avenue School, which is walked to school. We walked everywhere at that time. And I think one of the notable things that happened to me at the school as far as race relations is concerned was I had to go to the restroom. So I asked the teacher, I think I must have been about in the second grade, and I asked the teacher to let me out to go down the hall to the restroom. So I was walking down the hall, and there was a principal who was chastising a young a white girl, and she didn't see me, and she was telling her that she shouldn't be acting like, she used the word N-word. I was really surprised to hear that. It kind of upset me. And so when I went home to tell my parents about it, and my mother particularly, she didn't seem to be very, very surprised. And
she had seen that movie before, huh?
Well, she'd heard that before, too. Mm-hmm. And so that was kind of the first real racial activity that caused me to realize that in terms of talking with my father and mother, how important it was to get a good education and in order to be competitive in life, and how important it was, because I would be facing that kind of experience for the rest of my life. So that was a good start in terms of that.
Tell me a little bit about your mom and dad.
Well, my mother and father were from the South. My father got here in the early teens from Birmingham or from Atlanta. As much as people look at and think about their past, or the parents and the grandparents and all that, to me and in our family, it was not a big deal. So we didn't pay much attention to that. And I don't know as much about my family as I would have known if I had lived now. I talked to my brother, my youngest brother, Lawrence, got a chance to talk to my father quite a bit, more so than I did in terms of just day-to-day kind of talking. But so I don't know as much about my grandparents, although my grandmother lived with us, I guess, until I was about maybe 3 or 4 years old. So I know, but to really remember whether she was the my mother's parent or my father's parent, I'm not even sure of that now, which one she was. Mm-hmm. But she was...
Well, you were little. So.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I was little. I think about that with the twins. When I say the twins, my youngest son has twins. They were born here in Inglewood. But the main thing is that I was able to be raised. I was able to see them day in and day out almost. Week in and week out, would be a better way to put it, so I could see them a lot as they were growing up. And so that helps me to think about my own bringing up and some of the things that I did not, a lot of the things that I did not do that they just kind of do routinely. One of the things, of course, is all of the photographs and pictures and et cetera that they will have to substantiate their memory and document their memory. And where I don't have anything around to look at and point to and say that is happened then, that happened there, and I remember this and I remember that and that kind of thing. So, but then I went to Hooper Avenue School, graduated. I did graduate from the sixth grade, and went to McKinley Junior High School. Always felt that the importance of education was key to me as far as I was concerned. So I didn't mind trying to get good grades, and most of the time I managed to do that. So I was pleased at that, and I had some good teachers, in my opinion. I had, particularly in high school, I thought I had Mrs. Speck, who was a math teacher. I thought that she really had good discipline in her class and encouraged people to do their best, and it was good for me and good for my best friend at the time, Artis Grant. We kind of excelled in that class, and that helped out a lot, too, in terms of it. Mm-hmm.
So now, what were you, this was one of your favorite classes, but what were your best subjects, and what were some of the other things that you, did you have other interests outside of school at that time?
Yeah, I had interests outside of school. Of course, I liked to try to play softball. Really enjoyed that. We had a lot of street games at that time. Playing on the street was a really joy. It was, I think, much more pleasurable. And then as I look at my twins, because they participate in a lot of organized kind of sports, and you learn a lot more, I think, maybe better in a more professional way. But as far as just pure enjoyment, I don't think it's quite the same, because that was I think about that and just an enjoyable part of life. Even now, and when I'm talking to you about it, I can just kind of feel and see. And when you we used to have make balls out of cloth and twine and wrap them up and things like that. And when you get a good one, it was really something. But the person that owned the bat was the king of the hill. You know,
they
marbles.
Ran the game.
You ever play marbles?
Of course,
marbles and.
jacks and pickup sticks and bolo bats and
hide and seek. All very simple things, but they're just pure enjoyment without any negative stuff to it, you know. We didn't think about all of the negative things that people put on activity as they do today. You know, if you enjoyed it, you enjoyed it, you know. It's not a lot of undercover thoughts and that kind of thing. I think life was pretty positive then.
What were some of the other things that were different about growing up in Los Angeles compared to today? Things that you can see a change in now, having lived in this city your whole life?
I think nearly everything is changed. You have a lot more opportunities in a way, or a lot more flexibility in terms of where you can live and how you can live. We had gangs. We had a gang there. The Bootsy Gang was very notable. But when I think about them compared to what gangs do today, it's just like night and day. He lived down the street, would maybe scare you once or twice or something like that, but it was never any kind of killings or injuries or stuff like that. I just don't know. In fact, when you think about gangs and what and how they've evolved and the kind of thing, particularly in Los Angeles 20, 30 years ago, maybe 40 years ago, with the Reds and the Blues and stuff, you know, where kids couldn't wear certain kinds of clothes and it being you know, life-threatening to do the wrong thing at the wrong time and stuff like that. You didn't have to worry about those kinds of things very much. So,
yeah. So tell us a little bit about high school and what happened then.
Well, in high school, I lived during the Depression, and so I appreciate things and the value of things and how important those things are. Whatever you have, you earned it and you value it. That kind of attitude, I think, has helped me to be comfortable with what I am able to acquire and the importance of being able to appreciate what you have acquired, and the fact that you need to be competitive, but at the same time, you need to maintain what you acquire. And if you're able to do that, you can be comfortable in life. And the importance of that being to the quality of life. In order to have a good quality, you need to be competitive. You got to have keep up with what's going on and try to relate to it. I was talking to Ed a few minutes ago how social media today, I try to keep up with it, but I can just get onto the edges of it. I can't get right solidly into it because it takes, for me at least, so much time to deal with it that I find it's kind of overwhelming, and sometimes I'm not quite sure if my thoughts are as accurate as I would like for them to be. Yet at the same time, I still feel that I am solid, even though I may not be up to date with all the technology and that kind of thing.
Yeah, well, you know, there's I think sometimes what would life have been like if we had social media, like especially when you look back at like high school days, you know, and all the uncertainty you have about yourself and trying to find out who you are and all this. And if, you know, if we were like living life out loud on the internet the way they are right now, I don't think I would.
I don't know.
I would like it that much.
I don't know. Yeah, what I would do.
Yeah. But I know that you learned a lot of really important lessons in high school about the value of life, and from your teachers and from your family and from leaders in the community and everything. So what did you decide to do after high school?
Oh, to go to college. I went to L.A. City College. It was on Vermont at that time. Still is on Vermont. I was a math major, and it was a good experience, too. We get there on the V-car. That was the public transportation. And the V-car was one that went down Vermont and Vernon and would catch you right once we got to 51st and Ascot to catch the B-car, to catch the V-car, to go on to College East Day. And we had a, I think it was a James Wellington Johnson Club there, which basically focused on black activities at the school to, what we call Negroes at that time, to, I guess, kind of the forerunners of Black Lives Matter, mm-hmm. let's put it that way, with much less aggressiveness than they have today in terms of where they're going and how they're trying to get there. I don't know.
What were your personal aspirations at that time?
Personal aspirations was to have enough money to stay in school. We didn't have loans and things like that, and so I didn't get entrapped with the loans because I worked continually from junior high school all my life. I've always worked, basically self-supporting. When I say self-supporting, I didn't have any help from anybody else other than yourself and your family in order to go to school. And so I couldn't live in the dorms and just concentrate on school itself. You had to support yourself as well as get your grades and this kind of thing. So it was a matter of time, learning how to manage your time and relate to it and keep the expenses down so that you can exist and exist comfortably. And so going to school, that was a major part of my life. And it stayed that way until Pearl Harbor. Pearl Harbor was a day, I guess, I will probably not forget. There are a few days in my life that I won't forget. And one is when we had the earthquake in 1935, which was a major one in Los Angeles, and the shaking of the house and this kind of thing. In fact, when it first started, the earthquake, I was really pleased because I played the violin. And I was practicing, and I said, "Oh, this will be a good thing. I won't have to practice anymore."
I bet you thought your vibrato was really good that day.
Yeah, how about that?
And but you got out of practice.
Yeah, and then that shaking.
That's an extreme continued. Way to get out of it, though.
Yeah, it really was. And then you didn't realize how serious and how much damage it was throughout, because it really did damage the schools here, particularly Jefferson High School. Jefferson High School, I always had admired that building and how it was built. The earthquake just practically destroyed it, ultimately tore it down and built the what I call streamlined schools, which is a lower two-story height it was, round corners and fewer windows and things. It didn't look nearly as nice or as spectacular as I had thought that the traditional high school was. But it's still there, and Dorsey was built after that earthquake, and I think it was the first high school to be built after the earthquake. But that was a big earthquake. It doesn't get the publicity that the 1971 earthquake did here, but in my opinion, it was a much severe one and influenced education in Los Angeles quite a bit for many, many years.
And you were saying that was one of a few things that have happened that you won't forget.
Oh, yeah. Later things in life, when I think about some of the days, like when Martin Luther King was killed, and when Kennedy, first John Kennedy, and then his brother. His brother is significant to me because it was the first campaign that my oldest son, Timothy, was interested in. And we had actually gone to the Ambassador Hotel that night to be there when that incident, when he was killed. And we waited, had to wait, I think, a couple of days before they actually finally said that he had, that he was dead. You know, it was always like the hope that he would be able to recover and all this kind of thing. But they knew from the very beginning that he had died. So that was a very memorable day.
No, I understand that your college career was interrupted by being drafted. What was that experience like, and what happened then?
Well, being drafted, you know, the draft was a routine thing, expectation that when you got to be, when you were 18 and able-bodied, you were going to be drafted. And Roosevelt, President Roosevelt, was interested in helping the Allies. So he was doing everything he could, in my opinion, to help England without getting into the war. And then when Pearl Harbor occurred, we knew that it was just a matter of time, because the classifications, if you were 1A, it meant that there was just a matter of time before you would be in the service.
So this was a regular part of life for young men during this period.
Yes, it was. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Yeah, for men, it didn't impact women as much as far as being drafted is concerned, but it did affect them in terms of helping out and in every way that they could. Or that was one thing about that was, of course, basically the start of World War II, and that was one of the things that really was the best part about it, I think, in that it, as far as war is concerned, because I don't think war is an answer to anything, really, in terms of it. It's just the more you experience it, the worse it you realize that it is a very poor way to deal with differences.
So now, when you were called and went away to take you to get your basic training, talk about going to Tuskegee and then the experiences that you had with the Tuskegee Airmen.
Yeah, well, I was called, drafted here in Los Angeles, and inducted at Fort MacArthur in San Pedro, California, right, which is in Los Angeles. Had the induction and stuff there, and go through the various examinations that you have when you are inducted. Big room with, I would say, hundreds and hundreds of draftees taking these tests and stuff like that. And then they would call out after the results were known to where you would be assigned here and assigned there and assigned there. They'd gone through all of these names and things, and they never did get to me. So I was wondering what in the heck was going to happen, you know. Eventually, there were four of us that were left, and all of the four were black or Negroes, colored, and they sent us to Tuskegee. And one of the fellows that was involved was Arnold Bankston, and Arnold knew all about, at least in my opinion, all about the effort of Negro Press and et cetera to try and get blacks into the Air Force or the Army Air Corps, or to be able to fly and to be able to participate and to participate in the war on equal with whites. So by the time I got to Tuskegee on the train, I was really impressed. So my expectations were so high that when we got to Tuskegee, it was to Oscoda, which was Cheehaw. Cheehaw was the station for Tuskegee, and it was such a small little place that I knew that this was not where we were to get off the train. But lo and behold, it was the correct place. We called, they did have a telephone there. We called the base, and they told us, yes, this is your place at Tuskegee. We'll send you a 6x6 truck. And those were the kind of trucks that transported troops and that kind of thing around. And we'll take you to Tuskegee. Well, from this little station, we went to base, and at that time they were building up the base. And so I saw more cranes and building material and building activity than I'd ever seen in my life, actually. So I was really, from being disappointed, was again impressed. And that's where I had my basic training with Sergeant Taylor. Sergeant Taylor was a real hard guy who is typical, I guess. Know what a first sergeant is and how a sergeant is supposed to be. Well, he was that. And he...
Like straight from central casting, huh?
Oh, yeah, really. And so he put us through our chores and stuff like that. And from there, after got through at basic training, went to the, was in the oily room. And from the oily room, I found out that, well, first I didn't realize, orders said that we were in the Signal Corps. But when I got to Tuskegee, I figured that I would, that the orders were incorrect. I thought I was in the Air Force, but it ultimately became that the orders were correct as far as that was concerned. So I found out that I could get in the Air Corps if I could get into Officer Kennedy School. And if I graduated from Officer Kennedy School, not only would I be in the Air Corps, but I would be an officer too. So that was a good thing, and ultimately that's what happened.
Well, you know, much of your journey as a Tuskegee Airman is well documented. And in the time that we have left, I'm kind of interested in how, for you, looking back at the great career that you had, not only in the Air Force, but also in the city of Los Angeles, contributing, you know, as a real estate professional. What are some of the things that you are most proud of that you've been able to accomplish thus far?
Most proud of? Well, family. I have, I think, a good family, excellent wife, good kids. They are all doing well. Their families are well. They're healthy and are not a burden on me. We like each other. They like us. We like to see them. They like to see us. They come. And so I'm very proud of that and pleased with that and glad that I'm able to still be around to appreciate it and relate to it. In terms of being able to work, I worked for the County of Los Angeles for 32 years, I think it was, and be able to retire from that. I had many jobs at the county, administrative jobs. I learned a lot, and it helps me now, the fact that I retired from the county, and that's with the retirement plan that I have. I think it keeps me comfortable and competitive with life in general. So we're able to exist and at the same time realize that that we're okay.
Those things are super important.
Yeah, I got involved with real estate after leaving the county. In fact, I had Herman Ward was a person who was in the real estate business when he was working for the county. And he used to tell me this and tell me that about the real estate. But I didn't pay any attention to him. And a lot of my friends were in real estate. I didn't pay much attention to what they were actually doing. But I ultimately found out that if I had known what I know now, I would have been involved with real estate a lot sooner than I did. But when I did get involved after retiring from the county, I worked with Edna Scott Realty, and she taught me a lot about real estate. I became more and more involved and ultimately became a broker, and I have my own office and this kind of thing, and I belong to various boards, both the Realtors and the Realtor organization. Now I think I'm the oldest one around in terms of that, but I'm getting kind of used to that because in a lot of places that I go, I am the oldest person around, but. I had to give a speech one day at Air Force, local Air Force here at the base in El Segundo. McGee was Colonel McGee. He's probably one of the most famous Tuskegee Airmen around. He was a pilot, served in World War II and in Korea and Vietnam, and so he. He was in the audience, and I was telling the audience that I was the oldest one. This was an Armistice Day presentation, and he didn't say anything until afterwards. And he said, you know, I was born on a Pearl Harbor Day in December in 1919. I said, oh, you were? He said, yeah. So you weren't the oldest one. You weren't the oldest one in the room. So I always appreciated that he didn't get up and
contradict you.
Contradict me in that meeting.
Well, I tell you what, we've run out of time, but I wanted just real quickly, I would love for Ed to just say a little bit about the importance of the contributions that Mr. Lumpkin has made along with the other Tuskegee Airmen to what you're doing with the foundation.
First of all, I'd just like to say that it's a great honor to work with the Tuskegee Airmen and be a part of the history of the Tuskegee Airmen. We're at a point now where the living legends are fewer and fewer, and Mr. Lumpkin just stands out as one of the living legends that I just enjoy working with. He's a great supporter of the foundation, an avid fundraiser, just someone who exemplifies the character and the values of the Tuskegee Airmen. And so the foundation, in its 40 years of existence, lives out the history of the Tuskegee Airmen by giving scholarships to underprivileged, low-income kids who want to go to college. We focus on aviation, aerospace, STEM, and other disciplines as well. And it's our goal to replicate the kind of character and values that were found within the Tuskegee Airmen. And that's what the foundation is all about. We've given over 1,300 scholarships since the inception of the organization. We've been around for 40 years, and we are really making the best of the living legends and their final years. And we want to continue to lift them up and just be supportive of their history and to continue to make a future for the name of the Tuskegee Airmen.
Well, it is that character and that legend that has led us to honor you this year as one of our Making Waves recipients. We just appreciate the great work that you have done in our communities, Mr. Lumpkin, and also for just the great example that you set for all of us. No matter what color you are, wherever you came from, we personally are super proud of you and so pleased to have you come and share your story with us.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you for being here, both of you.
Thank you.
Okay.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during O'Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, oh.